Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Al Pessin, VOA Europe correspondent based in London. Previously, Al was VOA Jerusalem correspondent and former head of VOA English Programs Division. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Rabbi Herschel Gluck, chairman of the Arab-Jewish Forum and chairman and founder of the Muslim-Jewish Forum, both based in London. Rabbi Gluck studied Jewish law and philosophy at Talmudical colleges in France, Canada, and the United States. He is director of Or Avraham. That's a charity which is engaged in educational and humanitarian projects in the UK and internationally. He also works closely with Jewish communities, primarily in the UK, Europe, and the Middle East, by assisting them in community development, Jewish education, and religious needs. However, it is his role as chairman and founder of the Muslim Jewish Forum, an organization created to improve relations between Muslims and Jews in the UK and around the world, about which we will talk with him on Press Conference USA. Rabbi Gluck was also appointed the Order of the British Empire by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth in 2013. Given the increased tensions between Jews and Muslims in Europe, exacerbated by the attack on Jews and Jewish sites in Paris and Copenhagen, it is all the more important to discuss how Rabbi Gluck is combating anti-Semitism and bridging divides by dispelling falsehoods and misunderstandings through dialogue and action. And Rabbi Herschel Gluck joins us from VOA Studio in London. Rabbi, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
And I'm also delighted to welcome my colleague from across the pond, Al Pessin. How are you?
I'm well, Carol.
Well, Rabbi Gluck, first, I would like you to talk to us about these two organizations, the Arab-Jewish Forum and the Muslim-Jewish Forum. Tell us the difference between the two and why you created them.
In 2000, at the time, I was very involved in trying to build bridges with people in the Middle East and in Bosnia, Kosovo. And thanks God, it was very successful. And then I thought to myself, is everything rosy and all right in my own back garden? How are things in the UK? Things are fine, but will they necessarily remain so? And I thought that we need to anchor the good relations that exist between the Muslim community and the Jewish community, make them more formal, and thereby underpin the strengths of good feeling that existed between both these communities. This was long before the attack on the Twin Towers, so therefore there was no external reason for me to start this organization, but I felt that there was a need in both communities to have a point of contact where we could work together in issues of common concern, be they religious education or religious slaughter, shchita, halal, issues of social housing, issues of relating to the authorities, and so on, where both communities had been suffering as minorities. Regarding the Arab-Jewish Forum, that was actually an idea of Lord Soley, a very well-known parliamentarian, and he asked me to come on board before the organization began in order to find a way forward. There's, of course, a difference between Arab and Muslim. Not all Muslims are Arab, and not all Arabs are Muslims. There are many Muslims in Southeast Asia, in India, in Europe, or in the United States, of course, who are not Arab at all, but they're Muslim. And same thing vice versa. There are many Arabs in the Middle East who are Christians, proud Christians. So therefore, Arab and Muslim are not synonymous, but they are two communities. Of course, many Arabs are Muslim, so therefore there is a crossover, but they are two distinct entities. And of course, both these communities, Arab community and the Muslim community. At the moment, sadly, there is friction between them, between certain Arabs and certain Muslims and Jews. But historically, Jews and Muslims, Jews and Arabs, have generally lived very well together, and there have been many golden ages in the history of both our communities.
Well, that was very well said, Rabbi. And a question before I turn to my colleague, Al. With respect to the Arab-Jewish form in particular, my note in the literature that you say there are many interfaith Muslim-Jewish groups and various groups bringing together Israelis and Palestinians over that question, but that this forum is unique in that it aims to explore in depth, as you said, the long and intertwined history of Arabs and Jews from the vantage point of significant populations from both communities in Britain. So talk about some specific issues and projects on which you're working today.
At the moment, we're working very much regarding Shechita Halal. There have been many organizations who have challenged the humaneness of the way we slaughter religiously. And sadly, there is often an undercurrent of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia in the constant attacks on these matters, and we're trying to educate and to help people understand why we insist that we should have the right to slaughter in this way. We also deal a lot regarding social matters. Many members of the Jewish community and the Muslim community have large families, various generations together, the grandparents, their children, their grandchildren, and sometimes their great-grandchildren. And therefore, they need to have homes which are suitable for this type of family living. We also deal with issues regarding education. Both the Jewish community and the Muslim community want to be able to transmit their traditions to their children and to future generations, and therefore require schools where they will have the capacity and the ability to do this. There are also issues regarding attacks on the communities, and there are also issues regarding intercommunal matters, that the Muslim community and the Jewish community, being sometimes influenced by people outside, sometimes have negative views towards each other. And we try our best to educate and to help people understand that there are many positive points of contact between both communities, and we need to focus on those issues and try to work together, which is beneficial for both communities and for society at large.
I'd like to turn to my colleague Al for a question.
Thanks, Carol. Rabbi, you live in this neighborhood of London called Stamford Hill, where there are lots of Orthodox Jews such as yourself, but also lots of Muslims.
Yes.
In the neighborhood. You told Al Jazeera that Jews and Muslims in your neighborhood are not just living side by side. You said there's a palpable feeling of warmth.
Yes.
When one sees members of the other community in the street or going about our business. That sounds startling, Rabbi, especially nowadays. In many cases, one might expect suspicion at least, perhaps even fear or anger. Why do you believe it's different in your neighborhood, and can that be replicated elsewhere?
It's really in this neighborhood because there's a long and positive history of the Jewish community and the Muslim community working with each other, being good neighbors with each other. And this is ingrained, that if someone would come from the Middle East and say to my Muslim neighbor, how comes you're friendly with a Jew? Don't you know what they're doing to the Palestinians in Gaza? They would look at them as if they've come from another planet, because they say, we are very concerned about what's happening in the Middle East, but here our communities have a very positive history where we are not just good neighbors, but we actually care for each other. We actually concerned for the welfare of each other, and we're actually there to protect each other. And I think that this is something that hopefully can be replicated elsewhere and is being replicated elsewhere. There are other parts in the world where it is more difficult for various reasons.
I understand that one of the Jewish organizations in your neighborhood, perhaps it was yours, gave a donation to a charity drive that a Muslim organization was conducting to help people who were suffering in Gaza, as you mentioned, during the Israeli offensive.
It wasn't my organization, but there was a Jewish organization in the neighborhood which did it.
Was that a controversial thing? Was there criticism for that?
I never heard any criticism. I think most people saw it. This was a purely humanitarian action. This wasn't a political statement. They weren't condoning the firing of rockets from Gaza on Israeli towns and villages, but they felt that there were people who were civilians, there were children who were suffering, and they were trying their best to ameliorate and to help these people in this situation.
Carol, I have lots more questions, but back to you for now.
All right, and we'll take a break. First, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Rabbi Herschel Gluck. He is the chairman and founder of the Muslim-Jewish Forum and the Arab-Jewish Forum, both based in London. And I'm your host, Carol Castiel, along with VOA Europe correspondent Al Pessin. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Or you can always send feedback via email to PCUSA@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Here's a shout out to a very faithful listener, Gloria Akintola from Nigeria. Well, back to you, Rabbi Gluck. And speaking of Gloria, she has a question for you. It's more directed toward why or how is it that so many youth around the world seem to be attracted by fundamentalism, particularly Islamist fundamentalism. And we're seeing that wave in Europe. So many young people are going off to fight in Syria or are sympathetic, you know, with Islamist fundamentalists. Do you have a response for her?
I don't think that they are being attracted to religion. I think, sadly, they're being attracted to something which looks very sexy and gives them a feeling of glory and meaning. A lot of these kids that join these organizations, that join these terrorist organizations, feel that they have a very empty life. And if they would be in the UK or in the USA, they would be members of street gangs because they feel alienated. They feel a lack of a sense of purpose. And sadly, the only sense of purpose they feel would give their life meaning is the type of big gang that we see, be it ISIS, be it Al-Qaeda, be it Boko Haram, organizations which seem to be exciting. And they feel that in this excitement, they will find meaning in life. Many kids who go to religious schools do not join these organizations. Most of the kids that join these organizations actually went to state schools, went to regular schools in the UK, and they didn't have a proper religious grounding. And therefore, they felt a desire to express their identity in a negative way, in a destructive manner. I think it's much better to educate, to give kids the ability to know their tradition, to know what their religion really teaches, in order for them to feel meaning within a positive traditional context.
Well, Rabbi, that leads me to ask you about the situation in France and in Britain in particular. To what extent are the governments helping or harming the situation, this inflaming the bad feelings between Jews and Muslims, particularly in France, with the large North African population and youth that are oftentimes segregated from the larger population and they feel alienated? Do you have any advice for both countries or Europe in general in terms of integrating some of these communities so that they will not be so prone to join up with these organizations?
I think that people should have the feeling that they can be proud to be who they are and the right to live a life which is a traditional life, as they did for many, many centuries in North Africa, in the Middle East, and other parts of the world, that they should feel that they can live their life and still be a good French citizen, a good British citizen, a good German citizen. I think that in Britain and United States, we have things that are not perfect, but I think there's a much more constructive attitude towards minorities, that they can feel part of a mosaic, part of the country, as someone with a unique ethnic identity. I lived in France for 8 years, so I'm very aware of the problems that exist in the banlieue and exist amongst many immigrant communities, that they feel sidelined. And I think that this idea of assimilation, that everyone has to assimilate in order to be part of the society, has failed. That hasn't helped, but it has made a very large alternative lifestyle for many people, and an alternative lifestyle which is meaningless, which people feel that they don't really belong. In other words, they've lost what they had and they haven't been given anything instead. So therefore, they find themselves in this spiritual, cultural no man's land.
Let me turn to Al for a follow-up.
Thank you, Carol. Rabbi, more and more Jews in France and the UK are saying they don't feel safe anymore in these countries, in these societies, and they're looking to emigrate, probably to Israel, perhaps to the United States or other countries where they may have family connections. Do you think they're right? Are they no longer safe?
There are fears. I mean, the attacks that we've seen in Copenhagen and in Paris, of course, raise concern. And they are something which undermines the security of Jews in this great continent, and especially that we saw within living memory that millions of Jews were killed. And prior to that, there was a terrible history of pogroms. So therefore, Jews are traumatized, and we can understand that.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu welcomed these feelings, this trend that seems to be building among European Jews, and said, yes, come to Israel. Do you think that's a helpful thing for him to say? Would that be a good thing if there were a mass migration of Jews from Europe to Israel?
It's not going to happen. We all know it's not going to happen. We know that Jews in Europe are very well established here. Europe without Jews isn't Europe. And we want that to continue as long as it has to. And Europeans want that to continue. Let's not forget that since the early 90s, we are living in an unprecedented historical situation, a situation that from the Urals to the Atlantic, from Russia to the Azores and Madeira, Jews are living with full rights to practice our religion, to live as Jews, wherever we are in Europe. That has never, ever been so in the millennia of European history. So therefore, there are very many positives in Europe at the moment. And actually, we see that very many Israelis are coming to live in Europe, getting Polish passports, getting German passports, getting Spanish passports. So therefore, Europe is very attractive to many Israelis.
Carol, back to you.
Harking back to the question that Al Pessin asked you with respect to, should the Jews in Europe be looking to emigrate to Israel to feel safer, as Prime Minister Netanyahu has advocated? I was wondering, to what extent, with all due respect, do you think that people like Benjamin Netanyahu are perhaps making the problem worse? And we know, as I said, about the many Jews of Arab lands are starting to reassert their Arabness as well as their Jewish identity. And to what extent either politicians like Benjamin Netanyahu or others from Israel are trying to sort of negate this Arab part of the Jewish identity for their own political ends?
I think, with all due respect, Benjamin Netanyahu has his work cut out in the Holy Land. He has a lot of problems, sadly, which he has to deal with, be it nuclear threat from Iran, be it the threat of Palestinian terrorism, be it the threat of ISIS terrorism, be it the threat of having some very difficult neighbors. And I think he should concentrate on dealing with the issues at home before he comes and tries to sort out the issues for the Jews in Europe. Once he sorted out his issues, then perhaps he can consider trying to help us Jews in Europe. At the moment, I think he should deal with his problems and we'll deal with our problems.
Indeed. Well, Rabbi, quickly before I turn to Al for another question, as I said, there are so many obstacles to the dialogues that you're promoting. There are enough problems on, let's say, the Muslim or Arab side vis-a-vis Jews. But what about some of the obstacles on the Jewish side, or perhaps on the Israeli side, as we said, vis-a-vis the prime minister? Are Jews a part of the problem by framing the problem as, you know, us against them, instead of looking at these points of convergence as you have in your own neighborhood and throughout Britain and Europe?
I mean, on Sunday, a youngish man from Israel came to visit me to discuss conversations that he was organizing between middle-aged professional Jews and Palestinians in the Holy Land to get people from both sides of the divide talking and starting to see the other as a human being with whom one can communicate and one can work with the other and not just see the other as an unknown enemy. And we discussed how to further this project, and I'm very pleased to hear that this is going on in a very constructive and a very positive manner, and it's bearing very positive results.
Al, another question.
Yes, I just had one more, and you've led me right to it, Rabbi. I understand that you've worked as a mediator in many conflicts. You mentioned a couple of them, Bosnia-Herzegovina and the Middle East. I understand the list also includes Kashmir, Kosovo, and Sudan, among others. And all of these, it strikes me, have a religious element to them. So I wanted to ask you how those experiences impacted what you're doing here in the UK, and what lessons cut across all these different conflicts that might be helpful not only in the UK, but elsewhere in the world?
It's a good question. And actually, they led to what I'm doing in the UK. I remember negotiating between Kosovans and Serbs. Of course, Serbs are Orthodox and Kosovans are Muslim. And there were a lot of issues between, there was a war between them. And officially they weren't talking. And here we were all talking together. And one of the Kosovan delegates said, at the end of the day, all the roads lead to Belgrade. In other words, okay, we have different ideologies, we have a different perspective, we want different things. But at the end of the day, there are basic things that we share. And I think there's something along those lines here in the UK that, despite the fact that Muslims and Jews, of course, there are many differences between us, and we have to recognize those differences and not be in denial. But at the same time, there are many issues that we share, that we are all British citizens, that we have many common concerns, that we have many issues that we can work together, which will benefit both our communities and society at large. And I think that is what we need to focus on. We have to focus on what unites us, whilst being aware of what divides us. But we have to see that there are many areas where we have so much in common.
It sounds to me like you're almost giving us the definition of moderate as compared to the definition of militant, which is, by definition, intolerant of the other to the point sometimes of violence. So how do you, as a moderate, and I'll put you in that category if you don't mind.
With pleasure.
How do you counter the narrative of the militants that seems to have quite a lot of appeal, especially in the younger generation in Europe, in the Middle East, and elsewhere?
By showing that, thank God, being a moderate has a productive and constructive consequence for our communities. That there's a lot of good mileage in being a moderate. In other words, that people are accepted, people can contribute, people can make something out of their lives in this country without becoming an extremist. As many young people have said to me, that they could have been attracted to extremism, but they saw that there's so much scope in being a moderate. Why become an extremist? This works.
Finally, for me, one thing I had wanted to talk about is Jewish extremism, and this seems like the right moment. I don't know the extent to which it exists in the UK, but certainly in Israel there are extreme right-wing Jews who actually attack Arabs, as well as take extreme political positions on Palestinian issues. What's being done in the Jewish community to counter that extremism?
Many Jews feel very strongly, and rightfully so, that this is something which is abhorred and something which needs to be condemned. But we need to educate these extremists with love. Sadly, they feel that they are being good Jews. They feel that they are protecting a minority who have suffered so much over the years. And what we have to show them is that even though their intention is right, but we need to take that good intention and divert it to positive, constructive things to help the Jewish community, to contribute to the Jewish community, and to treat every single human being, who each one is created in the image of God, with respect and dignity. And that will also help the Jewish community in the long run. We have to look as a statesman. We have to realize that history isn't one day. History has a long arch. And by treating others with respect, we start a positive cycle that the other people will also treat us with respect, and this is a win-win situation.
Carol, back to you.
Well, Rabbi, thank you for that. And as we close, something more concrete and practical. We've been reading about the work of Shomrim. Mm-hmm. This is police-trained voluntary Jewish community patrol that mm-hmm. responds to reports of crime, antisocial behavior in your community. Is that right?
Yes, and after Lee Rigby's tragic murder, the Shomrim actually protected the Muslim community centers, and this was very much appreciated by the Muslim community.
You were talking about the British soldier
who was killed in Woolwich, Lee Rigby, who was hacked to death in the most gruesome manner. And then sadly there were some extreme right-wing British people who felt that they had to let out the anger against all Muslims indiscriminately. And therefore the Muslim community centers were targeted and required protection. And the Jewish Shomrim, the Jewish Guardian organizations, actually volunteered to guard the Muslim community centers.
Well, once again, another example of how on concrete issues the two communities can really learn from each other and work together in a very harmonious way. Rabbi Herschel Gluck is chairman and founder of the Muslim Jewish Forum and the Arab Jewish Forum based in London. Well, Rabbi Gluck, we can't thank you enough for taking time to come in and share your terrific insights and talk to us about the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington and London. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Kevin Fowler, and joining me on the program was VOA Europe correspondent Al Pessin. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.